The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. All right, Al.
I'm fine, Jess, apart from yet another lacklustre showing by Spurs at the weekend. But, you know, there we go. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
What can you do? What can you do?
I know. We popped up with some friends of ours just at the pub there. Monty's at home with his bro, just around the corner. We were, and I was keeping an eye on the score there because I was watching the rugby as well. And it was odd, wasn't it? Were they 3-0 up at one point or not?
Yes.
Yeah, 3-0 up at one point. And then I looked again, it was like 3-1. I saw a screenshot to Monty. He said, I know. I did it again. Like 3-2 of them. Oh, my word. And then three, and I looked at the end, 3-3. What are they doing? I mean, this has happened before, hasn't it? You say there's a joke going around, wasn't it? About.
Yeah. Well, I received a joke, sort of meme over the weekend. Tottenham fans have been told that they are no longer allowed to own dogs because they don't know how to hold on to a lead.
Which I thought was
yeah. Yeah, that, and excuse me. We have two dogs. Well, one's very elderly, but it is. You just think, goodness me. I mean, okay, Southampton brought in the Premier League, fighting for their lives, so they're going to be fighting for every point they can get. Fair enough, but it always seems to be against Spurs, you know, that these sort of games are won or drawn and, you know, points are dropped. And, of course, we exited the Cup. You know, we lost to Sheffield United, who went on to beat Blackburn yesterday and reached the semi-finals of the FA Cup, along with Man United, along with Man City and, of course, Brighton.
You know. Yeah, but what is it? Tottenham seem to be quite inconsistent, don't they? You know? So
yeah.
When you start on a run of something, you think they're going well, all of a sudden they lose silly games. You think, what's going on?
Why are
you?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, does it need a wholesale change there from the top down or not?
I think that's that's the thing. You look under Levy's tenure, they have won basically nothing. I think apart from the League Cup back in 2008 under George Graham, there's just not been nothing won. And you just think all that investment, fantastic, best stadium in the country, and best infrastructure, best training facilities, but something ain't right. Something's got to change.
Well, do you think, there's rumours for a while that Harry's going to leave, Harry Kane. Do you think he will?
Well, yeah, I might get slated for saying this. I think Harry's got, you know, he's the all-time high scoring player for the club, fantastic servant to the club in every way. But I do wonder sometimes if they're tailoring everything around Harry Kane and whether that makes the team too one-dimensional. Because if Harry Kane's not playing well, then Tottenham don't play well, and that can't be right. You look at any other side in the Premier League. I mean, look how Brighton are doing. They're doing fantastically well, and I've been to see Brighton. I went to watch the Palace derby last week. There's a derby against Crystal Palace, and it was a proper old battle. And Brighton, just actually they took a few risks and scored a great goal with local lad Solly March. Scored the only goal, but they can score from anywhere. They've got players that can score from anywhere, and
I did say that to my son on the weekend. He wasn't happy, so I think they'll sell Harry Kane, get some money in, and rearrange it a bit because it is reliant on him a bit. And these, sometimes, and like you say, without him, there's no strategy really. It's rely on him.
Yeah, that's it. It should be a group of players. That's look at how the arch enemy Arsenal have done so well. You know, they've just. Build a side. They can score from anywhere. They've got loads of. Everyone wants to get on the score sheet, and they play as a cohesive team, and that's the difference.
Okay. Well, let's talk stocks, Al, because it's been an awful morning from an awful weekend of football there to awful morning.
Awful start.
The Credit Suisse thing rumbling on. Of course, UBS. I don't really know much about it. All I know is apparently there's 81 bonds that have been made worthless, which has put a shockwave through the banking industry because all the banks have one of these 81 tier one bonds, and now they're going to be more expensive, obviously more high risk because they've been deemed. But it's in a bit of a shockwave. But my thoughts is, hopefully this will put a, you know, a backstop now to the banks. I mean, because to be honest, you know, the banker system and all that, they all seem to be reacting quite quickly to problems, putting fires out. What's the worry is you know, will the fire get bigger, or they manage to put the last fire out? You know, that's the trouble.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I think this is the big worry, isn't it? You know, all of us can remember what happened during the credit crunch, and of course, it was that House of Cards coming down, wasn't it? Or so it seemed, or the domino effect as one after the other went to the wall. And of course, with the Silicon Valley Bank, HSBC moved rapidly to backstop the UK ones. That's great, but of course, Credit Suisse is a much larger entity, and there are concerns there, and I think they were UBS were, you know, pretty well strong-armed by the Swiss Central Bank into stepping in to make the acquisition. So of course that's going to rattle UBS investors and their balance sheet and everything else. So I think we need to see some signals pretty quickly that the new structure is sound, and the banking industry is on a solid footing, because, you know, one more of these and we could be in free fall again. And we all saw what happened last time. I mean, the markets just collapsed completely.
Yeah. It's funny, the stresses of the market have felt, you know, at the bottom, that's where the worries are. But of course, with good companies, I've seen, you know, good companies selling off this morning, and they're not affected at all really by this. And you think, well, for the longer term, you know, this is the kind of opportunity you need, really, because there are some good companies, you know, coming in a bit of a discount to what they traditionally trade at. And you think, you know, over the next 2-3 years, they'll be fine. It's just at the moment, they are, you know, it's just so much worry around. People are scared to sort of buy and invest, and that's the thing. We've had, you know, it's been very, I mean, in the last 20 years, the market has been quite volatile. And if you go through the great financial crash to, you know, COVID, inflation, and, you know, it's part of me thinks central banks are a lot to blame as well. They seem to be behind the curve, then they go to extremes. I'm just, you know, it's a bit worrying now what the Fed will do on this week, raising interest rates, whether they'll keep their guns or they'll reduce. Because the worry is if they back off, then people will see them scared and panicking, you know, and that's what you don't want.
Mm, I suppose. Yeah. But, it's got to be firm, decisive action, and I think you know, if that can be demonstrated in the next few days, because they've got to get ahead of this, you know, they've got to be ahead of this, and you know, come out and reassure the market, because, you know, we've got a pretty uncertain global macro picture. We've got the issues with Ukraine and Russia and everything else. Of course, Putin will be absolutely lapping this up. You know, this will be music to his ears. So we've got to get ahead of this, and we've got to backstop it, and just show resilience and stability in the market.
Wednesday is going to be a big day. We've got CPI data from the UK, inflation data, and then later on in the day we've got the interest rate decision from the US. So that'll be a big day. So I think markets will be wobbly until then. But I hope inflation is coming down. Hope otherwise we'll be in a bit of trouble. Okay, stocks, Al, what are you looking at?
Okay, well, firstly, I'm going to touch on a company that has had a pretty torrid 18 months, a company called Versarion. VRS is the epic code. And this is it's an innovative British engineering company that is engaged in nanotechnology and the production of graphene. And of course, the company has over the years acquired several companies and put them into the group, which includes companies that manufacture Nanene, which is microlayer graphene, Polygreen, which is enhanced polymer graphene, graphene inks, and these are conductive inks used in the production of circuit boards, and of course also the use of graphene and graphite in defense technologies, and enhanced plastic products, and also more recently in construction as well. So we're hearing now about the company engaged in 3D construction, where the graphene technology is used in flooring to reinforce concrete, reinforce concrete walls. The company announced That it had a recent agreement with Costain, the building company Costain, to produce a 3D printed concrete wall. So this is a curved wall that requires no steel infrastructure because it's reinforced with its products. So it's a company that's right at the edge of graphene technology and a multitude of applications. Over the past year, the company has announced partnerships with Umbro. They have a graphene-ware partnership, so sportswear now incorporates graphene into clothing. They have a graphene-ware partnership with GoTo Gym, Bayer Brazil. They've also signed heads of terms with Superdry, and they're engaged in a raft of different projects to develop graphene technologies across clothing, across construction, and of course I've already mentioned 3D printing and so on. So the big thing what's weighed on the company, I think, over the year is the fact that under the stewardship of Chief Executive Neil Ricketts, the results were delayed. And, of course, the results were eventually announced to September 30th, and the company reported revenues of 11.1 million, which were up from 5.7 million previously. Graphene revenues rose to 2.1 million from 0.7 million. An increased loss EBITDA number of 2.4 million from 1.9 million previously. Company still has cash, or had cash at that point, of 1.4 million. But it also announced it had developed a new graphene production facility at Longhope in Gloucestershire, along with an innovation centre where it had laid a floor incorporating its new graphene technology. So, this is a technology company right at the cutting edge. And Neil Ricketts, of course, has overseen the development of the company all the way through. But he resigned. He felt that his continued presence at the group wasn't beneficial. Although I beg to differ. I think he's been responsible for taking this company forward over the past 6 months in terms of its evolution as a company. But obviously that's not been reflected in the share price, and that's partly down to certain pundits in the marketplace. And I don't think I think we can guess who the pundits in question are. Those pundits undergoing utilizing their usual strategy of character assassination. So of course they do that, try and discredit the chief executive, and then of course at the same time the reputation of the company suffers and the share price falls with it. So Neil Ricketts has left the company. The company raised $318,000 at 3p, and the shares are now trading at 4.5p, so well ahead of where that raise took place. And of course it has this raft of deals and projects in place that is continuing to push forward. It's got a market cap now of just $9.5 million. So given that the share price has come down from 25p this year, it's hit a low of 2.2p, and we're now back at 4.5p. I think there's every reason to support this company and re-engage with them going forward. And I think at this level, it offers excellent value.
It was very odd that the resignation of Neil there was first announced on the 10th of March, and that was it. Just one line, pretty much, no thank you or anything. Like that. Neil founded this thing. And then on the 14th of March, further resignation cheer, and then they thank him in there. So I don't know what happened there, and they come back and they also said the board like to thank Neil and all that stuff. Then they also announced the SP Angel, a corporate finance now, company's sole broker, so Berenberg are no longer there. So I don't know what's going on. It's very odd that they didn't even say, thank you to the outgoing CEO who founded the company from his garage, pretty much. I like the space, but the trouble is they're still burning a lot of cash, and then, and they've not got a huge amount of cash. So you know.
No, but I think also, you know, let's not forget a couple of years ago they signed a deal with BAE Systems, you know, which was and that was 2D Tech, and with sorry, not BAE Systems, Rolls Royce, and of course that was key to, you know, real validation of the technology in the defence sector. But as you say, you know, I mean, on that further to resignation of the CEO, Neil led the company since its inception in 2013, so he's still a significant shareholder. But they say in the announcement he's on garden leave, ceases to have day-to-day responsibilities, but he remains a director of Versarion. So I think he'll still be very much involved because he's built these relationships with the company, so you can't just walk away from those. So I think he'll still be involved. A new chief exec will step up and assist him in those duties. But I think, given he's got the company this far, it looks to me, given the profile of the projects and the joint ventures and the partnerships he's put into place, I think this company is well worth backing at this level.
Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, we've spoken on a few occasions about Airtel Africa, and again, this is a mystery to me, given that the company turns over so much money. But there we are in this day and age. So the company's worth $3.9 billion. AAF is the EPIC code, and we are just on year lows now at 106.5p. In fact, the year low was 104, was just over 104p. Year high of 173p. And this is a company that effectively controls and operates mobile telecommunications network in Africa, and particularly Eastern Africa. And they've just continued to invest. They've been backed by numerous funds along the way, and they have continued to invest in the evolution of the evolution of the business. New CEO Segun Ogunsanya came in October just over a year ago, and since then the company has continued to grow. They've continued to invest, and they've bought more spectrum or airtime, if you like, and enhanced the reach both in those countries in Eastern Africa, Tanzania and Zambia in particular, also in Nigeria. The company announced a really strong set of interim results in September. Revenue up nearly 13% to $2.5 billion. EBITDA up 14.5% to $1.25 billion. And then we've just heard from the company again, quarter three numbers. So the cumulative numbers have risen yet again. Revenues still up 12.1%, now $3.91 billion. EBITDA, again, still up 12.5%, this time to $1.9 billion. And this is on the cumulative year outlook. Customer base is up just over 10% to 138.5 million customers. And Ogunsanya said in the announcement that they're really pleased with the progress to date, and they anticipate sustained growth for the remainder of the year. On a couple of occasions, they were of course hit by forex costs and all the rest of it. But this is a real cash generator, this company. I mean, at the half year, mobile money transactions were up nearly 32% to 86.1 billion. So in a country that is so sparsely populated and covers such a huge amount of area, having effective mobile communications are of paramount importance. And of course, it's the only way for residents in the countries to transact in many cases. So it's a vital part of the infrastructure, a vital part of the network, which is why they've attracted investment from so many funds over the years, investing into the business and helping them with the investments into setting up the towers and obviously increasing the range and the reach into these countries. So So again, you know, we're here now, and as a result of the falls in the market, the stock is down, is down again this morning. It's down 1%, but we're just off those year lows now. The company pays a dividend every year of 4.1%, so it's a strong dividend payer. So I think if you're looking at East Africa as an investment destination, I think this is an integral, or should be an integral part of any portfolio in that region, because it's in this burgeoning, fast developing marketplace with so many millions of people living there. So you know, the numbers are strong already, and I'm sure they'll continue and get stronger still.
But yeah, why do you think the share price is down then?
I think they were hit by forex costs, number one, and number two, I think it's just currently, the there are sort of global macro concerns, and I'm sure, that a lot of people are taking money off the table. A lot of investors and funds are taking money off the table. So the any sign of strength in the share price, the company is being sold off. But if you look at the chart on the year overall, we've seen sort of various blips and dips through the year. But on the year, I mean, we were up at nearly 130p in February. We've come off since then. That's, of course, in line with the fall in the market over the past few weeks. So I would anticipate this will recover. If the market recovers, it'll recover along with the larger weighted stocks in the FTSE 100 and FTSE 250.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if as long as inflation doesn't come in high, the market should do well towards the end of the year. You know, because there's, I think it was the worry dissipates about the banks and all that stuff. People think, well, you know, some decent bargains out there actually. So
yeah, there are.
Okay,
yeah.
What's next, Al?
Okay, so finally, this is a company that I've held shares in for some time, and it's a company which is the 100% owner of a gold mine called the Pakrut Gold Mine in Tajikistan, and obviously this is the mine is very remote, but if you go to the China Non-Ferrous Gold website, the epic code is CNG. If you go to the website, you'll see the mine infrastructure on the homepage there. It's a huge sprawling infrastructure on the side of a mountain. And, of course, being on the side of a mountain brings its own inherent problems, such as inhospitable weather. The company had announced in February that it had to stop production at the mine due to avalanches. It then announced at the end of last week that the power supply had been re-established, production had been restarted. Although due to road access, smelting was going to be restarted at the end of March 2023. So that'll probably be restarting in a week or so. But China Non-Ferrous Gold are the owner of the Pakrut Gold Mine in Tajikistan, located, if you're familiar, which you probably aren't, but it's located about 120
kilometres. I'm not familiar with Tajikistan at all, no. It's one of the stands, but that's all I know. So I'm looking here. So it's near central Afghanistan, China, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. That's where it's surrounded by. So it's a safe jurisdiction then.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, very remote. Located, but it's 120 kilometres northeast of the capital city of Tajikistan, which is Dushanbe. But it's located on a gold belt called the Tian Shan Gold Belt, which extends across Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and into Western China. And it hosts many multi-million ounce gold deposits across the region. But of course, you know, it's something we rarely get to hear about, but this stock in particular caught my eye. The half year report in September last year, 302,000 tons of ore extracted. 274,000 were processed, and they extracted from that 16,330 ounces of gold, and that was poured, and it was sold into the market at $30.7 million. That generated an operating profit of $4.9 million. The management led by Zhang Qi, the managing director, said that they were confident in achieving internal production target of 700,000 tons of ore across the year. And of course, that was before snow stopped production. So I'm sure we'll see a statement from the company with a revised production statement in the not too distant future. But this is a company that it owns and operates the mine. And of course, it's producing and pouring gold. So a lot of the risk is off the table. Probably there's
risk. A lot of risk is off the table. Chinese-owned, it's in Tajikistan. Well, I can't even say it.
Tajikistan. Well, that I think is reflected in the valuation. But again, there's been an upturn in the gold price over the past few days for obvious reasons. So my view is that any company that is engaged in either exploring for gold or producing gold in particular will be on the table or will have the slide rule run over it. And there may be better companies out there operating gold mines, but this is one of the cheapest. The company's currently got a market cap of just 5 million and it owns this huge mine.
Isn't it cheap for that reason, though? There's very high risk. You know, super high risk. It's like in an unpronounceable country run by the Chinese. You couldn't get a more risky stock. Even the RNS has got Chinese, you know, writing on it. You think, what the heck? You couldn't have picked a riskier stock. I think risks are off the table.
I didn't say the risk is off the table.
I said
as a gold producer, the risk is off the table. But of course, the risk is probably more with the jurisdiction. And so, if you're familiar with the jurisdiction, it might be one that you want to look at and consider. You know, that was the point I was going to make. But
so you hold some of this stock, do you?
I do.
When did you buy that then?
I've bought it sort of. I've dipped in on off over the years. I just like gold producers, and I look to have a sort of have some gold in the portfolio. So that was one way of doing it. I don't own a huge amount, obviously, but it was very speculative, and I've just picked up bits and pieces along the way when it's fallen.
Well, no, I mean, on a positive, gold is. You know, I think people are moving towards gold and Bitcoin because they don't trust central banks anymore. It's like,
exactly. Yeah.
So,
I think look at what's happening with Credit Suisse. Tells you what you need to know, really, isn't it? So, yeah.
Well, I suppose, yeah. You know, there's as much risk as anything else, I suppose. But where is gold at the moment? It's 1990. Yeah, that's good. 1991 now.
Yeah. I mean, it's performing. I guess you could say in a predictable fashion, because in times of uncertainty, and obviously we have uncertainty in the banking sector, so you know, gold is a safe haven. So people will be pulling their money out of banks and sticking it to gold, which is a standard reaction.
Yeah, cool. All right, marvelous stuff. Well, listen, if anything, I've learned a little bit about you know, the geography of Tajikistan, and very interesting. I'm going to say it's not one for me, Al.
I had gathered that.
But you never know if there are people out there like a punt, doing research.
The whole point is we try and provide a variety of stocks and something new to look at. And you've got something to look at here. If you're familiar with the region or have knowledge of the region, you might take a look at this and say, well, actually, I know the region. I'm not worried about the incumbent administration, but that's a producing mine.
Who knows the region, really? Does anyone know the region that you think listening to this podcast would know the region? Oh, I know that region very well, actually.
It was, well, So a lot of people have work experience in China and in the region, and you know, and they may well be. I don't know, you know. But the point is that if you know the region, and again, it's one of those, you know, if you're investing into any company, do you know the region? Do you know the company? Are you familiar? Is there a strong rationale for buying what the company produces, or all of those factors together? And you know, obviously, if you have knowledge of the region, we all know where gold is right now. You know, that's a given pretty well. You know, is this company okay? It's had the problems with snow and avalanches. It's now back on stream. It's going to be producing gold. You know, selling gold into the market. So surely that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just looking into the politics there. First, looking at the Wikipedia page. So on they after Gorbachev, they become sort of independent, you know, and all that. But then, after the war, almost immediately following independence, the nation fell into civil war among various factions, often distinguished by clan. But literally, there were, you know, who was fighting? Yeah, Russian. There was Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, and Russia. Russia and Iran focused on keeping peace in the warring nation to decrease the chance of U.S. or Turkish involvement. God, it's had a bit of a stormy past, isn't it?
Yeah. But then again, if you go to some of the African countries, you know, you'll have troubled and volatile past. So you know, it all depends on your view or knowledge of the region in comparison to other risky administrations around the world. You know, you have to take that view, but. You know, you've got a bit more knowledge about the company, hopefully, and you can do some research and take a look at the website. You know, although it's fairly basic, you know, you can get a very good idea and a view of what the mine is about. It's just this huge sporting infrastructure across the side of a mountain.
Yeah, it's a big old plant there.
Mm.
Cool. All right, then. Well, there we are. There's one CNG for you guys who like a bit of risk. Go for it. Marvellous stuff. I'll speak to you next weeky.
Cheers, Just. Speak to you next weeky.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.